The Cloudcast is sponsored by Intel Cloud for All, driving the creation of tens of thousands of clouds.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast here in the 2015 wrap-up show, 2016 prediction show, what for some reason always turns out to be kind of one of the more popular shows. It also, we'll give you a heads up, also tends to be one of the longer shows that we do for the year. For anybody who hasn't listened for the last 5 years, my name is Brian Gracely, and joining me is our senior iPhone correspondent, Aaron Delp.
I knew you were going to do that.
Well, I was going to call you our senior college football respondent, but I don't want to go there today. You got stuff going on.
But, yeah, absolutely.
Welcome aboard, dude. Good 2015 for us. It was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was amazing because the podcast was very cool this year in that we got out a lot more, got to shows a lot more, got to do a lot more shows because of it. I mean, great opportunities this year.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. We did 60 shows this year, I think, including this one. Maybe not. But yeah, more shows than we've done before. Your company helped us. We always keep track of how well our guests do. We went over $5 billion in VC and M&A funding, and SolidFire was part of that. Congratulations to you guys getting acquired.
Thank you. Yeah, it'll be certainly an interesting ride for the near-term future, without a doubt.
That's right. Well, and the good news is it solidifies that we don't have to talk about storage once again in 2016.
Storage is done.
That's right. So that's good. We didn't want to have to go there, but now we definitely don't have to go there again. So, yeah, it was good. Real quick, kind of. So, in terms of popular shows, you know, we don't give out awards. We probably should do awards at some point. Sort of most popular shows for anybody who wants to go back and listen. There must have been something about the summertime because episodes 200, which was Christian Riley and the future of connected cloud, episode 199, which was right around DockerCon, the first DockerCon in the summertime with Diogo and Nathan talking about Docker security, and DevOps communities episode 208 with Nathan Harvey from Chef were all pretty much neck and neck tied as our most popular show. So congratulations to those guys. If anybody wants to go back and listen, go back and listen to all of them. We think they all were pretty good, but those tend to be the most popular.
Yeah, and it was surprising to me because I don't know if maybe it's because of vacations, like people downloading pre-vacation kind of thing, but it was interesting to me because the show stats tend to dip in the summer and over the holidays, right around this time.
Yeah.
But it seems like everyone downloaded those. Like I said, maybe they were just, you know, pre-downloading to go somewhere.
Well, we've always said our show has two really good purposes. One is when you're mowing the grass, we're good for killing time. And when you're at the beach and you're trying to drown out your family or your kids from the pool,
yes,
we're good for that too. So
we're all about the use cases.
That's right. So this is always the show that we always worry that it may end up having become a two-parter. Thank God we've never made it a two-parter because we tend to ramble. But we kind of do predictions, and then we kind of ramble about, you know, the stuff we've learned, because at the end of the day, this show has always been about, you know, what can we learn and what can we teach the community. And so we're not going to go back through the 2014 predictions. I know some people do that. We kind of wrote them all back out. People can go back and take a look at them. Anything from your predictions from 2014 that kind of jump out at you that you either are like, damn, I got that one spot on and nobody else did, or I was way, way off?
I think that, and we'll actually talk about it when we do the next prediction, certainly is I didn't think Docker quite went through the trough of disillusionment that I thought they were going to go through, but I think they will next year, which we'll talk about more of that later. The container ecosystem beginning to mature. I think that one in particular, I mean, it was one of those, you know, it was pretty easy to see it coming. So it was a pretty easy prediction. And then actually because I try and always break mine down into career development, and then industry stuff, and the career development stuff of kind of blogging, if you will, becoming a lost art. Like, I don't even really read blogs anymore, even though I did a couple recently. I just don't get any information from blogging anymore. I get it all through various other forms of social media.
Yep. Yeah. And I think for me, there was two. I said, I think AWS is finally kind of understanding the enterprise, and then I gave an example at the time of kind of how they're building and integrating upon their basic stuff. And I think at the time I had used kind of the new RDS service as an example, where it was like, yes, you get the database, but it does automatic backups, it does automatic snapshots, it replicates it across regions, and all these things that you would have had to do manually. You know, I look at where they are this year and the stuff they announced this year, and you know, if anybody thinks AWS went fast in the past and they were able to kind of build,
yeah, absolutely,
watch out, because you look at the services that they do. I don't know. Take like the IoT service, for example, which, you know, most people would say, hey, you know, IoT, a lot of buzz right now, probably multiple years out, but probably going to get big. But you look at their service and it's like, oh, they have a data ingestion thing, which goes, you know, dumps the data into S3, and then it integrates with Kinesis, and it integrates with it. And you start going, oh, they've finally gotten to a point where all the base platform stuff is just
things
under the, it's like, you know, watch out, because they will start building services on top of that really, really fast.
Yeah. They went from building technologies to now taking those foundational technologies and actually building true solutions with them.
Right. Right. And the other one for me was, you know, I sort of said nobody values cloud management software. You know, I don't know if that was 100% true. I mean, we saw like Ansible, which was great. Ansible here based in Raleigh and Durham, got acquired by Red Hat. But, you know, the number I'm hearing is still it was around $150 million deal. So, yes, there's still lots of $100 million, $150 million deals out there for people that are doing stuff around cloud management and config management and open source tools that are commercialized. But haven't seen a $1 billion one out there yet.
Well, and you bring up a really interesting point there, though, of, you know, everyone wants to be the $1 billion unicorn.
Right.
But at the end of the day, is doing the faster, take one, maybe two rounds and get out at a smaller price, is that really the way to go now? You know, you look at SocketPlane. SocketPlane didn't even make a year. You look at Ansible. You look at a lot of companies that just took a couple rounds and went out.
Yeah. In both those guys' cases, I mean, Ansible took, I think they took $5 million, and Docker and SocketPlane basically took nothing. They bootstrapped themselves. And so, yeah, I mean, there's this weird mesh right now where you've got people that took one round and got out, and then there's sort of nothing in between. And then you've got the ones that are now taking 5, 6, 7, 8 rounds, and
right.
Who knows what's going to happen with them, because their valuations are off the chart.
Yeah, completely agree.
So, we thought we would do, because this is our fear is always, you know, this show could run incredibly long if we just started rambling about everything for the year, because it's so much happens. So I thought what we would do is this. We have a whole list of topics that we do our normal topics, and then we've got a whole bunch of things that we just said we'll just give like a one liner take on it. And so maybe we just kind of mix and match those two things together.
That works.
Let's see. So let's do this. Let's start with kind of what we call grades on some various topics. And I'll just throw out the topic, or you throw out the topic. We'll kind of give it a grade, one line, cliff note on it. We'll move on.
All right.
You went to both OpenStack summits.
So, yes. No, I did not. I didn't go to Tokyo.
Vancouver? Oh, you didn't go to Tokyo. That's right.
Yeah, I did go to Vancouver.
So what was your take on OpenStack for 2015?
it has reached that point where it is almost 100% productized, if you will. It has moved from this hodgepodge of, you know, science project pieces everyone puts together into the vast majority of people I know that are consuming it through Platform 9, through, you know, Cisco MetaCloud, through Mirantis, through some kind of product now.
Yeah.
And that's just, in my mind, it's a natural evolution of moving, you know, in the Simon Wardley model, moving towards, you know, productization and commoditization. It makes perfect sense if you go look at his curves and go back and listen to our podcasts.
Yep. Yeah, that was the interesting thing to me about it was OpenStack was not any of the new technology. It was you can now buy it as a consumption model. So Blue Box, Platform 9, you know, MetaCloud, you talked about all those guys. I think that's the model that'll probably end up succeeding for people that want to consume OpenStack. I think it's still hard to build, and Mirantis is doing well, but you know they haven't reached escape velocity yet, which may or may not happen.
Yep, agreed. What's your thoughts on AWS?
Super bullish on AWS. really impressed with The team really impressed with how fast they keep going. And to me, the most interesting thing about AWS was they published their numbers this year. So now they're going to be transparent. And I mean, this is going to be the year. I mean, we've heard FUD in the past from other vendors about AWS. I mean, the FUD about AWS is going to be off the charts. And the worst part of it is there's now data that people have to try and counter. And, you know, they're making a lot of money. They're growing very fast. And their margins are, you know, 20% operating margins, 20% plus. Like, those are software company margins. And so everybody that says, hey, they're a commodity company, it's like, yeah, boy, that's a nice commodity business to be in that makes
it. No kidding. Just about anybody would take that. Well, and the other thing, too, is the rate at which they're growing at scale. Because, yeah, it's easy to say, oh, we're, you know, I don't know, 300% year-over-year growth, and I'm making that number up, if you're like a $10 million company.
Right.
It is not easy to do when you are a billion-dollar company.
Yeah. They're going to be $6-8 billion and 80% growth.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what about Azure?
You know, what's funny is I don't follow it nearly as close. All I can say is good reputation, good buzz, and everyone seems to refer to them as the strong second to AWS now. Like, I always thought for the longest time Google was kind of referred to that way, but it just in talking to people, it almost seems like Azure has moved into second place. Now, I have zero numbers to actually say about that, and I'll kind of flip it over and ask what you think about it. But, you know, that's the biggest thing that hit me this year.
Yeah, I think so in my day job, you know, the Wikibon guys came out with some numbers. They actually had Azure ahead of AWS. Now, that was like all cloud services, so that includes SaaS and everything else. So, you know, I think the biggest shift for me is just the overall shift up in Redmond. I mean, they're talking about Linux, they're talking about containers, they're talking about scheduling, they're part of the Cloud Foundry Foundation. Like, what's going on at Microsoft is pretty interesting. I keep saying, I think they're trying to get to the point where the OS is, they're agnostic to the OS and they want to focus higher in the stack. It feels like it's going that way. But a lot of interesting stuff going on in Redmond, which is good. I think it's good for the industry because everybody is fearful of just one giant company doing really, really well.
Yeah.
So let's close off on these grades real quick. We'll come back to them. What about Google? What was your take on Google?
You know, it's almost like a push for me. I almost feel like Google is in the almost exact same position they were last year, where they're a decent alternative. Now, when I'm thinking about, you know, Google Cloud specifically, but then where the kind of the breakout happened was certainly around Kubernetes.
Yeah.
I mean, the Kubernetes technology has really taken off. And then, you know, they went and hired both Kelsey and Sarah.
Yep.
And so they've got great evangelists there, and they're getting really good buzz, and everyone seems to really like the technology. And it just seems very much more purpose-built than trying to meld containers into OpenStack,
right?
You know, for instance. Yeah. So that's where I think they're, you know, they get the shining moment for the year.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of in the same boat with you in terms of, boy, they've got a bunch of technology. They market it for about 5 minutes, and then it feels like it's boring to them. Like, oh, okay, we did.
They're like, oh, that's not shiny anymore. I'm moving on.
Yeah, which is
typical,
you know,
Google.
Like, you kind of hear that about the Google culture. What the interesting thing to me was they hired, they bought Diane Greene's latest company, which was kind of stealthy.
Yeah,
a bunch of ex-VMware people. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of culture melds with Google's culture. I don't know. I mean, it might be great. I have no idea. But Diane is now in charge of all of Google Cloud, and
right,
she doesn't mess around. Like, she's obviously had a lot of success both as a inventor and as an investor. So it'll be, I'm interested just to sort of hear the message that comes out of Google. Cause I think the biggest thing for me with them is, you know, they keep talking about how they're relevant in the enterprise, and yet, you know, they haven't figured out how to sort of distinctly separate their message from the part of Google that's constantly in beta, that gets rid of products, you know, like, and that might just be the consumer side of Google, but it's all Google. And I think it scares enterprise customers to like, wait, is this new thing the next Google Wave, or is it the next email? Or,
yeah.
Wait, your email product was in beta for 3 years. They got to fix that part. And But they've got a lot of cool technology, like you said, and Kubernetes is part of it. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens with them.
No, agreed.
So let's shift gears a little bit and apologize to people. We might bounce around a little bit. Do we bother talking about any of the job changes? So you're going to change jobs. You're going to have a new company.
Right. Yeah. Knows
you guys got bought by NetApp, which is cool.
Yep.
Who knows what your job's going to look like?
I have no idea. No, I say that kind of jokingly. I've been assured everything just kind of continues as is, at least for the foreseeable future. But there's always a certain amount of trepidation when you know they all come in and go, well, you know, we're gonna get this deal closed, and everyone gets new job offers, and everyone goes, what? So but I mean, that's a lot of us haven't been, you know, this is my first acquisition, right? And the other guys on the team that I've done, they're like, oh yeah, this is my fourth acquisition. This happened, you know? So,
so you're not going to retire on a yacht somewhere?
No. Unfortunately, it wasn't Larry Ellison money for me. Unfortunately, you know, being 200 and some in, you know, the Chad Sackett old philosophy of, I wasn't one of the founders. So, you know, right. Like I was telling you earlier, I think I get to, fix my driveway.
There you go. Well, that's our piece of advice for anybody out there. Even if your company gets bought for nearly $1 billion, if you're not one of the first, I don't know, what, 40 or 50 in?
Probably,
expect
yeah.
to keep working. Just, keep that in the back of your mind.
But you put in
an 80th hour for the week, you're going to be doing it for a little bit longer.
And the interesting side topic, we actually were talking about this before we hit record, was it is kind of funny to watch people that, you know, follow careers and give job advice, because for the longest time, you know, oh, you got to do startups, you got to do this, and you got to do that, and it's where the opportunity is, and you're never going to have those opportunities in a big company and this and that. And yeah, I mean, let's be completely honest, you know, signs are showing there's a slowdown in the kind of investing, and everyone's talking and predicting a tech bubble. And, you know, that might be one of our predictions for next year. But now there's starting to be the articles coming out and go, you know, that startups, that's not such a good idea anymore. And it's just kind of funny to watch.
Yeah,
when the articles trail.
When the sentiment in Silicon Valley is, hey, our magic pixie dust, maybe it's not as magical as we thought it was, start coming out, you're like, ooh, okay. Yeah. They've all gotten used to, they've all started to become disgruntled with the idea that, why am I paying $7,000 a month in rent for a one bedroom apartment? Maybe something's wrong here. So, yeah. So let's sort of take topic one that we had on here. Public cloud making any money?
AWS is.
Yeah.
No, you know, I say that jokingly, but what's interesting to me is I, you know, from everything I see, it really is. And I do see that continuing without a doubt. But I do think, again, I keep referring to Simon Wardley and kind of his longtime predictions coming true, because I do firmly believe in a lot of what he says. You know, if you don't have a couple billion dollars, though, don't even try.
Right.
Like, yeah, unless you're human. Right. It is. Unless you're one of the top couple. I mean, I think that's proved itself out at this point.
Yeah. I mean, we saw, you know, AWS did well, Azure's growing. You know, IBM made a bunch of investments, you know, they bought Blue Box, they bought some other stuff. They're, you know, they're seem to be doing, you know, that's their shift and where they're going. And then you have people like HP who said, hey, we tried,
we're out,
we're in, yep. we're out, you know, but officially out.
Rackspace made a pivot, HP made a pivot, CenturyLink made a pivot. Yeah. I mean, we saw a number of people exit.
I think AT&T and Verizon both got out, and
yep.
You know, and end of the day, oh, and VMware, you know, VMware and VirtuaStream have something going on.
Right.
We're not exactly sure what's going to come out of that, but yeah. So you know, I think the public cloud will make money, and then you know, you look at like SaaS companies. You know, people like Box aren't really making money, and they continue to lose money. But I think that's a little different. I think it's different when. And this is the thing that people have to be kind of wary of. If you're in the IaaS business, it means you're probably buying and building data centers, which is massively capital intensive. So, you know, you look at that and you go, okay, I got to measure profits and losses by how efficient they are. And then you have people like these SaaS companies. And I think from everything I can tell, and I've been trying to study this more and more, the way to measure those guys, because they're obviously not building data centers, they're, you know, riding on top of AWS or whatever, you know, provider they're on top of, it's all cost of acquisition. And apparently there's this magical curve between, you know, it's like the old telephone industry. Like they used to say it costs like $200 or $250 to acquire a customer, like
yes.
marketing and outbound calling and all this sort of stuff. And then at that point you got them, and that's why you got locked into contracts, was then they knew how to monetize you. Right.
Yep.
And I think that's the thing with the SaaS companies, is it costs them a ton of money to acquire a customer. You know, they don't have these lock-in plans like cell phone companies or cable companies do. And until they get enough repeatable customers that stick around for a while and get sticky, you know, their revenues grow, but their losses grow as well. And, so you got to kind of measure them differently. But I think over time, I mean, I don't know anybody who's not spinning up some new application in their business, big business or small business, that SaaS isn't one of the first things they look at, because you can just go get it and they're typically pretty good.
Yeah, it just reduces so much of the friction, because at the end of the day, it is a truly differentiated, you know, the big thing about IaaS is at the end of the day, all you're doing is lifting and shifting. It's either IaaS in your data center or IaaS in a public cloud, but you're still dealing with infrastructure. Right. And the whole idea of, you know, whether you want to call it PaaS, whether you want to go the, you know, Andrew Schaefer model and not call it PaaS anymore and call it platform, whatever we want to call it, there's a differentiation there, because you're just getting a service. And it actually goes back to, you know, the podcast we did with Matt Ellis. It's been a while now, but
I need to get him back on.
He's always super informative, and one of the big light bulb moments for me was very much this differentiation of how do you kind of figure out costs behind this? Is this now cost per transaction? Is this now cost per API call? Is it cost in some kind of metered way versus building a data center, putting a bunch of gear in it, and depreciating assets and environmentals over time?
Right.
I mean, it's just a completely new way to think about things.
Yeah. Well, and it is one of the hardest things. You know, people talk about private cloud and why private cloud fails, or, you know, isn't as growing as fast as other domains, and people have different opinions. But I mean, if you're an IT person and you have to think about making your service profitable, like, that's not a skill you've ever done before,
yep.
Let alone just pricing it out, you know, to make it, you know, how to market it, how to make it appealing, and all that stuff is hard. I mean, it's a skill they teach you in computer science class. It's a marketing, product management, psychology type of thing.
And yep.
That's why the cloud providers either tend to do really well or really poorly, because probably depending on how well their marketing does and their underlying technology.
Yeah.
Flip side of that, you know, when we pivoted the show, we said, well, we're going to spend more time on public cloud. We're going to spend more time on open source. Is open source making any money? Or let me rephrase that, because that's a kind of an ignorant way of saying it. Are people making money when open source is involved with their business?
Red Hat is. No, I'm just kidding.
They are.
So I love just throwing out the one-liners. No, what's really interesting to me is, okay, let's compare and contrast. We're going to, you know, I am going to slightly pick on Docker for a second. Compare and contrast Docker versus Red Hat. You have open source models for sure, mm-hmm. but is Docker making any money yet? Are they just doing the classical, just get out there, mindshare, land grab, make everything open, get critical mass around something, and then try and monetize it after the fact? You know, what's weird is I firmly believe the days of closed source is over. We said it on this show more than once that we kind of believe VMware is the last closed source big software company.
Yep.
So I don't think it's
Oracle's probably the biggest.
Yeah, Oracle's the biggest, but I think VMware was the last one that came along, and now we have this new model of, in order to get the critical mass and get eyeballs and, you know, people in at the keyboard wanting to work with you, you have to have open source. Like, it is just maybe a nice to have before, now it's a have to have. Yeah. The problem with it is, a lot of these startups are very much doing this. A lot of the guests we've talked to, but you know, how fast are they building, and are they building fast enough that the monetization rate overcomes the burn rate? And I don't know that we have perfected that model in the industry yet, other than Red Hat. You know, Red Hat just keeps chugging along.
Yeah. And I think the difference is, I had an interesting conversation with some people. This is the fun part of our job, is all the behind the scenes stuff, but I had an interesting conversation with some people lately. And, you know, I think Red Hat did tremendously well, because essentially they could sell they sold ELAs for RHEL, because people were used to buying ELAs, you know, in the 90s and in the 2000s, and they compared it to Microsoft and their Oracle ELAs, or, you know, so their business, while it was open source, I think, you know, kind of benefited from the fact that the buying behaviors were a certain way.
Yes. The conversation, they fit into the enterprise buying behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. And people want to buy support. Enterprises want to buy support. That's their, you know, that's their thing. What was interesting to me in talking to this person who, you know, ton of enterprise software sales experience, now working for a company that, you know, does, you know, is sort of open core, if you will, you know, does open source, but then sells commercial, is they said, you know, there's kind of two problems. One is, that first payment that somebody makes is typically really small. Like it'll be $1,000 for like the most basic license, 'cause they want one or two features. But they said it's really hard to, as a salesperson, to know how big a deal it's going to be. And they said, you know, when you worked at a commercial company, you knew, you know, every deal was going to be this size, and you would motivate salespeople that way. And so I think because of that, you tend to have, you know, these smaller companies, they have inside sales teams. No offense to them, their inside sales teams are terrible. I mean, I've gotten phone calls from their people, and they go like, "Hey, this is Jim with such and such. Do you want to buy some? Do you need some?" You know, like, I mean, it's you know, we joke about it. And we'll use Docker as an example, and this is no knock on Docker, but like, "Hey, this is Jim. You got a Docker problem? You got a container problem?" No, I don't. Like, at least not the way you've explained it to me. Okay, well, thanks. Got to go. Bye. Because I got to make 115 more inside sales calls today.
Right.
That doesn't work selling to the enterprise, you know? So I think all those companies have got to figure out some other way to monetize themselves, but they're in a tough spot. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah. I think you can boil it down to one key sentence of open source is absolutely the way, you know, have to have going forward, but at the same time, fitting into the enterprise model.
Well,
for sales is going to also be the second. And I don't know that a lot of startups have thought about that or figured that, because what they want is they're going for customers. They're going for those, you know, key reference customers, those key first initial customers that are going to help them build the product and really think about things like, you know, and then what happens is that once everyone gets happy and gets a good product and they're ready to go attack the enterprise, everyone goes, we have to do this completely differently now. Well, and that transition doesn't always happen.
And I think, quite honestly, I mean, we may look back on this 5-10 years from now. And, you know, if you think about this, we're sitting here saying, hey, the way you get software, the type of software you use is totally different. But I'm sure that old sales model will just work with it, right? Which is insane by itself. And you think about, well, who actually makes money using open source software? Well, the people that deliver it as a service, right? The cloud providers that all use open source as their base, they're making money, you know, whether you're Facebook or Google or Amazon or whoever. And I think as we watch them become more enterprise savvy, that's where the buying tends to go, is you have to be delivering it as a service, not as a, you know, on a CD-ROM or on as a package or something like that.
This transition has been really interesting to me and something I've been following really closely, because you know, I want this, you know, I want the folks we talk to on the show, I want them to succeed.
Yeah.
Right. And at the end of the day, you're always rooting for everyone. Right. You want people to actually build very legitimate valuations and build legitimate sales and have good exits. And, you know, but it is interesting and a little head scratching at times as everyone kind of figures their way through the model, without a doubt. What's next?
Let's see. Let's take a second topic and then we'll jump back to some of the grades. I just wrote down, you know, everything's becoming an integrated solution.
Yes, which absolutely.
You've been heavily involved with that. You were, you know, were at VCE and did VBlocks when it was early, and you know, we both were involved with things like FlexPod. But even if we look at, you know, the companies that we've had on here recently, I mean, when we first had HashiCorp on the call, you know, on the podcast, we were talking to Mitchell about Vagrant.
Yes.
Now they have, you know, Atlas, which is basically all their tools integrated together. You look at CoreOS, and we first talked to Alex and Brendan, and it was like, why the heck is somebody making a Linux distro? And now you've got Tectonic, and you look at Docker, and it's like, it's all systems integrated around the trusted registry and around security. And so, like, it feels like people are finally realizing, even though there's this mechanism to build these individual one-off things that are cool, like, in a world where open source goes so fast and public cloud goes so fast, if you're bringing people kind of do-it-yourself technology, it's going to be really hard to get momentum, because people are just like, I need it to work out of the box, and I need it to, I need to not make the technology so visible.
Yeah, completely agree. And it's, you know, what's weird too, is it's a trend all over the place of just building these stacks, whether it's hardware stacks, whether it's software stacks, whether it's hardware and software stacks. I mean, that has just been a complete trend of everything, and kind of, you know, tip of the hat to like folks like Redapt, who we've had on, you know, Jeff on the podcast a number of times this year of, you know, and that is their number one thing as a reseller. And I think that's a leading indicator, quite frankly, of, you know, build the software stacks, build the hardware stacks, because that, you know, they've got customers that are legitimately asking for them, because they are looking at all these technologies and kind of going, huh, you know, okay, I need cloud native apps. Okay, what does that mean? Well, okay, I'll go read the 12factor.net. Okay, huh, that's really hard. Okay, I need somebody to help me. And then they're trying to go build these things, and they're realizing I need this tool, then I need this tool, and I have to get this, and I have to make a, you know, CI/CD chain and do this and do that and a whole workflow. And everyone just at some point kind of throws up their hands, you know, typically, and kind of goes, you know what? Yeah, I just need to go buy something like this, or have somebody go build it for me. Right.
Well, I think we said, I think people like Redapt are what the future of things like VARs and SIs kind of look like. You know, like you've got to have some in-house smarts. You're not just distributing equipment. You're integrating technology. And I think we're seeing it in the software stacks too. I mean, I think as cool as we think, CoreOS and HashiCorp and Docker and a lot of those are, at the end of the day, you know, people like Pivotal Cloud Foundry and Apprenda and others who build PaaSes, which essentially are integrated systems, those guys, you know, they're at least announcing how much sales they're doing, right? I mean, they're kind of showing that next, you know, hey, when you have an integrated platform, people can get started, they can start monetizing it, you know, and people can argue all day long if that's the right technology choice or the wrong one, or where the breakpoints are and all that stuff. But it does sort of highlight, when you integrate stuff for people and you give them the ability to start doing business work as opposed to technology work, everybody kind of benefits much faster.
Yeah. And the key point there actually is business work. At the end of the day, why do these solutions exist? Well, they exist to solve a problem. A lot of times a single piece of technology doesn't necessarily solve a problem, you know, so it takes the integrated solution to actually have a beginning to end workflow to solve the problem.
Right. Let's jump back to a few more on the grades. Do you want to make your annual Cisco buys Red Hat prediction?
Sure, absolutely. Okay. I think Cisco buys Red Hat this year.
What's your take on Cisco? Our buddy Pete Ulander's over there. Peter Ulander's over there. He's over there. Doing cool stuff with MetaCloud. I'm still not sure what InterCloud means per se, but MetaCloud seems to be doing well. They got a new CEO who, you know, small tidbit, my wife actually used to work for him some 20 something years ago when he was
a regional
operations manager or channel manager. So super nice guy, Chuck Robbins. What's your take on Cisco?
Does that mean you're going to, you know, like, do you guys get a Christmas card from him?
No. we might have a picture around the house somewhere with them from some sales meeting or something.
So. That's funny. So, you know, honestly, much better view than probably a year ago of Cisco. I would say Cisco has done a lot of steps to kind of pull themselves out of the dive somewhat. And that's a really good thing. But what's interesting too, though, is everything you just mentioned and most of the things that we're excited about and that we think are good opportunities are software. And that's very important to note, because Cisco isn't known for, you know, how many ports do you want me to activate with that?
Right.
Is what Cisco has been known for.
They're another classic example of a company who, if, you know, to be really relevant, they're going to have to be, to make some sort of shifts. And, you know, it's interesting. I'll follow some of the quarterly announcements. And one of the big things Chuck Robbins talks about now is like deferred revenue, which is basically, hey, let me tell you about my software sales. And that number is kind of growing. Cisco does still do some weird stuff. And maybe this is just a marketing thing, or maybe it's, I don't, you know, maybe just be trying to read too much into it. But, you know, like they'll go, hey, we're partnering with OpenShift and doing some stuff around their, you know, Red Hat's platform as a service. And you go, ooh, that's a signal. They're going to buy Red Hat. Aaron's right. And then they'll go, hey, we joined the Cloud Foundry Foundation and we're going to contribute. And you go, oh, okay, maybe this is just them, you know, kind of, you know, making investments in all the things because, you know, Cisco wants to be relevant everywhere. And then they do things like they have this technology called Mantle, and you see them contributing.
I was actually going to mention it. Yeah. Because when I was at DockerCon in Barcelona, they had a booth.
Yeah.
And the booth was there to nothing but talk about the various open source projects they're either contributing to or have outright started. Right. And I was very surprised by that. I mean, I went by the booth and I was like, huh, I kind of have a feeling what this is going to be. This is some kind of, you know, networking play, obviously, and this and that. And I went and I kind of walked away going, huh, that was completely different.
Right.
So Cisco was very surprising to me at DockerCon for, you know, as a data point.
Yeah. I think Cisco's going to be one of those ones. We'll get into predictions. They're one, they have a lot of money. They're a big player. I think they've kind of fended off the white box networking people for a while. They will be very interesting to watch in 2016, I think.
Agreed.
Let's see. We have a whole bunch on the list. We're not going to go through all of them. What's your take on VMware?
Oh, boy. If they can pull off the Photon Lightwave Cloud Native Apps thing to kind of, you know, handle this wave that's kind of going through the industry, I think they'll be fine. Because at the end of the day, I very much, it's so funny because I use them as the, you know, the next Oracle constantly. Right. I do firmly believe they're going to be around forever. They're going to keep growing and, you know, keep, you know, maybe Pat can go buy an island pretty soon next to Larry's or something like that. But what's interesting though is an Oracle bought a container company here recently too. Actually, I'm kind of commingling them, but you know, what they're doing is they're reacting and building moats and defensiveness around their core products so that they can, you know, fend off the wave as long as possible.
Right.
it seems to be what they're doing. But what's, you know, when we, you know, we did a show with Kit recently and, but it also, there seems to be very, you know, branches and subsets within VMware in particular that they're, you know, they're actually putting some resources behind this and trying to help everyone embrace the wave, but in the VMware way. They're not, I wouldn't say they're like going and meeting everyone out where the rest of the industry is. They're definitely taking the model that's out there in the industry and then adapting it to their needs, which, you know, hey, that's smart.
Yeah, well, it's smart business. I was surprised. I think one of my predictions was, you know, they wouldn't talk about containers unless it was always in a VM and it has to be tied to a VM. And obviously they did some stuff, you know, around the what is it, VMware integrated containers. I think they used to call it Photon, maybe not. But like you said, they came out with this distinct, hey, but if you don't like that path, here's another sort of complete path you could take, which I thought was very smart of them. You know, it was their way of sort of not having to make it religious for people, which, you know, I think people have accused them sometimes of like everything, you know, any color you want, as long as it's in a VM, you know, kind of that sort of thing. What was the other thing that was interesting to me with VMware is watching how many people in the VMware community. I mean, we've known a ton of those people. A lot of people have been really successful, and how many of them are trying to learn other stuff? Like they've sort of gone, yeah, it's not interesting to me anymore.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The number of, you know, again, going back to blogging earlier in the show, the number of the core V experts that were, you know, way back when in 2009, 2010 and the virtualization community in general, the vast majority of them, you know, Mesh has moved on to OpenStack and a lot of other things. And Kenny Coleman has moved on to really, you know, embrace the cloud native apps, the technologies. And there, it just goes on and on, right. There's not a lot of bloggers around vSphere anymore or vCenter.
Well, to me, what's interesting is you look at vMugs, which is always a pretty good indicator of what's interesting. And it's like very few of what they're talking about is VMware technologies. It's like how to advance your career, how to learn, how to do open source, how to, you know, like that's shifting. And,
The V Brown Bags are that way too. Right. The V Brown Bags, you know, this entire month they did a, you know, kind of GitHub focused kind of thing. And so, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We put a link to that. They did a really, they call it, I think they call it now 30 days of commitments. It was a project that Matt Brender started but it's, you know, how do I use GitHub and what's that going to mean for me? And, so yeah, that'll be interesting. And then obviously, you know, all the stuff that's going on with the Dell EMC stuff and that tracking stock and all that other crazy things that are going on with VMware. as a financial company. So, all right. This is always a hot button. We really like the Docker folks. What's your take on Docker? I'll preface it this way. We're very friendly, sort of open disclosure. We're very friendly with the Docker people. They're incredibly nice to us. They invite us to their events, let us be kind of an official podcast. So we get a lot of nice insight from the Docker people about where they're going. You know, we're not going to disclose anything that we shouldn't disclose, but they're very, very nice to us, and we're very grateful for everything they've given us over the last year plus.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The biggest thing for me was coming out of DockerCon Barcelona. Like, I think their foundation is in place, mm-hmm. as far as the products they're actually going to use to go kind of make money, if you will, off of container technologies in general. Yeah. If you go look at Tutum Cloud, if you go look at Universal Control Plane, if you go look at the Trusted Registry and the hardware signing and all the things, they basically did a whole bunch of announcements that quite frankly is money making stuff, right? Is I think going to be their path to profitability. And actually I'm super happy about it. I'm super happy that they are, and they openly admit it, they are not moving away, but moving out from just being developer centric and embracing operations. You know, there is the op side of DevOps, and you know, as Adrian Cockcroft said on the show once upon a time, the operations side is where the money is.
Right.
developers don't always like to pay. No offense to the developers, but you know, operations folks like to, because at the end of the day, you know, they can pay to remove pain a lot of times in their day to day. And so I'm actually super optimistic. I do worry, you know, now pricing models haven't been announced, and products aren't generally available yet, but just the vision and the announcements, I'm super excited.
Yeah. I've had this thought sort of percolating in my head, and I'll get it written down at some point. It basically goes something like this. I think Docker is the least interesting part of Docker anymore.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
By that, I mean, you know, I think you sort of were saying the same thing. Like, I think the underlying container technology, it is what it is, right? And you know, Docker invented a way to make it easier, but they didn't, you know, they're like Chick-fil-A. They didn't invent the chicken. They invented the chicken sandwich.
Yep.
But I've been really impressed. I mean, they've got the unfortunate burden that they've become the container company. And so any flaws that people have, any fears people have with containers, they have to address, right? The rest of the industry doesn't, you know, it's like, hey, Docker, you want to be the container company? So like, they've done a really nice job, you know, with all the security stuff they're doing. They're tying the security stuff into everywhere. So that was a huge concern that people have, was like, you know, how secure are these things? And so, and I think Diego and Nathan and their team have done a really nice job with that. And I think you're right. I think they're, you know, they're following that trend that we said, that everything's becoming an integrated solution. And so you can buy the registry, you can buy, you know, control, you'll be able to buy Control Plane, which essentially, like the analogy that I think we made one day when you were coming back from DockerCon, as I said, let's see, they've got Trusted Registry, that's Active Directory. They've got Universal Control Plane, that's vCenter. They've got the container technology, that's ESX. They've got, you know, they've got ways to run it in public clouds, even though they still don't know how to monetize that yet, because it's everybody else's services. That's kind of their public cloud play. And the pieces are kind of coming together. They've got some other cool things that are making sure that you don't have, you know, bad images in your registry. I forget what that one's called, like
Project Nautilus.
you know, they're putting together these other pieces. And again, I think we'll be sitting here at DockerCon, you know, in June, and people will say like, oh, I don't even talk about the container thing anymore. The container thing just is that thing, and everything else is what's interesting. And I think next year will be very much a year, like Docker was, they put out this idea that they like to call it container as a service. I was kind of calling it structured versus unstructured platforms. I think we're going to get back to people saying, you know, do I buy a platform like a Cloud Foundry type of platform, or Prendo or OpenShift, which is, you know, kind of packaged together for you, or do I do this pluggable kind of platform? Maybe unstructured is the wrong word anymore, but pluggable like a Docker, where pieces fit together, but you can take them about, you know, the batteries included, you know, but removable. I think that's going to be an interesting discussion in 2016 because
Agreed.
Everything's becoming more integrated. It's no longer, you know, kind of do it yourself. It's how pluggable do you want it to be, or non-pluggable, or whatever.
Yep. Agreed.
Absolutely. What about, so on the flip side of that, what about Cloud Foundry? We had an awesome opportunity to work with Sam and Chip and all the guys in the Cloud Foundry Summit and Cloud Foundry Foundation. And I think those guys are doing equally well. I think that community is growing. They're doing cool stuff in terms of integrations. And as best I can tell, they're further along in the OpenStack thing in terms of it's still pretty agnostic. Like it doesn't feel fragmented like OpenStack did.
Yeah, no, I agree. And probably the creation of the Cloud Foundry kind of foundation, if you will, that Chip and Sam are kind of running, without a doubt, I think was the right thing at the right time.
Yep.
First of all, you know, and what's interesting there is I think they are truly something for the enterprise and not just for the little. I mean, they are a big enterprise, big solution, and they know that and they're okay with it.
Right. Right.
And it's almost nice to actually see somebody kind of go, you know what? This is our use case. This is our customer. We're going to go get this. We're not going to be everything to everyone.
Yes.
Which I think so many of the companies out there, that's where they fail.
Right.
And so to have a focus on a market segment that they know they can win at and be differentiated in is that's probably the biggest thing, you know, completely not even technological, but just a business aspect that jumps out at me around Cloud Foundry. Now, from a techie standpoint, they seem to be, you know, on the kind of structured side, if you will, the front runner by far. Right. And I think that just continues.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think, I think they're doing well. I think they continue to go fast. They haven't really hit a lull that we can see at least visibly. I think, another area where I think we're pretty bullish in 2016 is around the Cloud Foundry ecosystem. Let's do this because we're beginning to run long. I don't really want to turn this into two shows. And people will look at the show notes. They'll see some things in there. We'll just turn those into other shows. There was a big discussion going on about technical marketing versus evangelism versus
evangelism. Yeah, I was actually going to say, let's hit that. Show. Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about one thing. We'll do two topics real quick, and then we'll get to predictions, and we'll make those fast. We've talked about this sort of split thing, this bimodal thing, for a long time. Simon Wardley has another thing. I tend to call it trimodal, but it's, you know, pioneers and settlers and town planners.
Yep.
I was very surprised at this year. I got a chance to go to we had said for a long time, there's no way the new stuff and the old stuff can deal with each other, right? Like you kind of have to fence it off, cut and run. I was very surprised. I went to the DevOps Summit, Gene Kim's thing. I'm kind of back in the camp of buying into what Simon said, that I think it's a trimodal thing. And I actually think you do have to split off the new stuff and let it go run and let people build smaller apps and microservices and all that sort of stuff. But I was surprised at how many companies, like big name companies, I mean, the Targets and the Nationwides and the, you know, like not super, what you would consider sort of, you know, purely Silicon Valley companies, were basically like, we did that. And then we had to integrate it back into the old stuff, like mainframes and mini computers and legacy systems. And they were successful at it. And so I'm very sort of anti-bimodal at this point. I think I'm finally coming to the realization like that if you buy into that, you will absolutely fail because you will create this haves and have nots. And you have to let somebody in your company go off and run the lighthouse stuff, but you better have a plan for how to make it come back and talk to some of the legacy stuff. And that's
the right ways or whatever. So is we were kind of saying starve the old, build the new. And now you're saying still that, but there needs to be a bridge.
Yeah,
for certain things as well.
Yeah, and
it's your third mode.
Yeah, and I don't mean it in the lame sort of vendor way of saying, well, gosh, that's our revenue stream, so let's call it a journey and all this other kind of crap that gets thrown out there. Like, I think like people should go spend some time looking at the DevOps Summit videos because there is distinctly a path that's sort of laid out there in terms of how you do it, and it's that people have been successful with it. They've integrated legacy systems. They've expanded upon them. you know, I mean, there's always a distinction between kind of enterprise company and Silicon Valley company. And the Silicon Valley companies will always tell you, the hell with the legacy. You don't need the old stuff. You can move, like, that's fine. You don't have any legacy. So of course you don't need the legacy, but I'll just give guidance, and I don't want to be a consultant in doing this, but I think if you go down the bimodal path by itself, the way it's sort of laid out by people like Gartner and some others, and you don't explore this sort of trimodal path and go look at some of the, like, I think you will find yourself in a world of hurt in a couple of years.
Well, and even look at, so it was actually really, it was fascinating talking to Dan Isla at DockerCon this year, because, you know, at the end of the day, he doesn't have a horse in any race.
Right. He's the guy from JPL.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, this is a guy who at the end of the day, his job is to go play with all the new stuff and figure out how to make it useful.
Yep.
And his statement of, you know, I was like, what is your use cases around containers? And he actually was like, you know, we bundle the old legacy enterprise stuff up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, because for him, there was an advantage to it, even though a lot of times people say there's not. It was just an ability to even take those legacy apps and go just a little bit faster.
Yeah.
And so that was a super kind of light bulb moment for me this year.
Right. Right. Yeah. The other piece of that I think, there were two other pieces that were kind of interesting to me, and we can skim over these. One, I got to talk to a lot of companies this year, kind of in doing Wikibon research and stuff. It was amazing to me how many IT organizations were like, we have no control over what goes on with SaaS. Like, we're not involved with the decision process. Like, we know it's out there. We know the company uses a ton of it. We're not involved with any of it. Like,
other than interesting,
maybe some Active Directory integration. But they're like, look, the business buys it. The business pays for it. We wish we had better control of it. We don't have any visibility into it. So that was interesting to me. And then the other one that was interesting to me, and we've talked about this a bunch, at least offline, was how many companies, like, you know, what you would consider like banks and insurance companies and others, were actively recruiting developers.
Yeah.
Every O'Reilly event that we went to.
Nike having the big booth at AWS and hosting all the events. And
Capital One. And,
right.
You know, I mean,
Riot Games is at every event. All they're there to do is do job interviews. And yeah.
Well, and the best example for me, the one that really solidified it for me, was we were at Cloud Foundry Summit. GE was on stage and they were doing a keynote. Mm-hmm. I was at AWS, GE's on stage. I go to Oracle Open World, GE's on stage. We go to some other event, GE's on stage. And I actually got a chance to talk to, you know, one of the kind of high up CIO level people from GE. And I was like, hey, GE never would have ever gotten on stage to talk about their stuff. I go, you guys were just, that was the world's biggest commercial. And they were like, yeah, it was. And they're like, we need developers. They're like, we need developers for the stuff we're doing. And we're not, and they're like, it was a very good investment because it, you know, it's huge visibility in front of tens of thousands of people at any given time. So I think we're going to see more and more companies that, you know, are in the automotive industry or banking or whatever you consider physical products are going to be recruiting developers.
Yeah.
Very visibly and actively.
Agreed. Absolutely.
Okay. You know what? Let's drop the last two.
Okay.
We'll turn those into their own shows. Let's just talk about predictions.
And sure.
We can go in. Why don't you go first, or we'll kind of go back and forth on these.
So the one I alluded to earlier, I'll start first. I think the Docker trough of disillusionment will happen this year. It's a push from last year.
Yeah.
But again, I think they're doing the right thing at the right time. And where I mean the trough of disillusionment comes about is they'll fall out of favor, but they'll fall out of favor at the container technology level. In favor of, you know, the open container standard or the open container initiative, whatever we're calling it. I think that will be a path forward, I wouldn't say pivoting because I don't think it's a pivot, but them introducing all of the operational tools that they have is the right thing at the right time and becomes their path forward before Docker containers, I'm using that in air quotes, becomes a commodity.
Yeah. I think what'll be interesting, so we obviously, you did one of the shows from DockerCon where we talked to the folks from Datadog and they had done this survey, and their survey basically said, hey, of our customers, like 8% are using Docker in production, using Docker actively. And it was like, okay, that number felt about right. Like, it didn't feel out of the ordinary. It felt whatever. I think Docker is going to have to very much manage, you know, we saw lots of 2015 predictions or 2016 predictions, and it was like, Docker will dominate the enterprise. You know, the enterprise is going to flip to containers. And like, they're going to have to manage that a little bit in terms of expectations for people. Like, and I think, you know, they've got to manage it between keeping the hype level high enough for the evaluation they're at and not making people go, oh my God, they're totally full of it. Like, you know, they're going to, if they say things like, oh, 75% of all customers are using Docker in production, it's like, okay. But I don't know what survey right. you took, but that number sounds out of whack. Like,
right.
But you're right. Somewhere in there, I think they got to manage that because there's such crazy expectations and there's all these companies that are trying to buy into, you know, trying to get in the Docker ecosystem. It will be interesting how much data they bring. And yeah. I'm hoping they look at it the same way that like Diogo and Nathan and those guys do in terms of security. Like, be pragmatic, like be very data driven, show use cases, all that sort of stuff. But that part will be interesting.
For yeah, me. Absolutely. What's one of yours?
So I think we're going to see some really big bets. So I think the legacy vendor. So everybody freaked out because of the Dell acquisition of EMC. It was like $50 or $60 billion. It was like, oh my God.
And we didn't predict that one.
No, I don't think anybody did. Good God. We were sitting at VMworld and it did not leak one iota. I mean, so, you know, kudos to the Dell people for keeping that thing quiet. I think we're going to see multiple really big bets for the legacy guys. They have a ton of cash. They're all holding lots of money. Microsoft is, Cisco is, Oracle is, I think we're going to see more things like that. And then I think we're going to see some, a few big failures. I don't want to totally throw HP getting out of the cloud in that because I don't think they were ever big in the cloud. But I think we're going to see, because I think this AWS thing has everybody freaked out. If you're in the legacy business or you're a traditional IT vendor or you just compete against them, now that you know what their numbers look like and now you know what their margins look like, you know, this is that one in the morning in Vegas where you go, I'm going all in. Like, I have to push in some chips to sort of change the rules. I think we're going to see some big stuff. And I know it's a cop out to not specifically call out things, but I think we're going to see some really big bets. And I think we may see a couple of sort of colossal failures just because people are betting big.
Agreed. Absolutely.
I'll throw out one more. I'm very curious to watch how, and we talked about this before, like I'm very curious to watch how the, what I'll call sort of open source VMware replacements are trying to monetize their business, right? The HashiCorps, the CoreOSs, the Dockers. And I don't even know if calling them VMware replacements is the right thing, because on one hand they are the new infrastructure, but at the same time, you know, containers are kind of a developer tool. So, you know, I don't really know how to categorize them necessarily, right? I want to call them kind of VMware replacements because the world likes to make it a VMware versus container thing. But either way, whatever they should be called, I think 2016, because of potentially rising interest rates and some other stuff, like how are you going to make any money and how do you avoid burning yourself out? Because you've all taken a bunch, some more than others. Do you survive just cash wise?
Yeah, no, I agree. And so I'll add one to that. And this actually comes from both a OpenStack keynote demo and then a DockerCon keynote demo. Both of them kind of used through various bits of container technologies, this idea of actually being able to move workloads seamlessly from public cloud to, you know, on-prem and kind of just moving things around. Finally, this idea of cloud bursting, if you will, that, you know, kind of went and blew up years ago. It's actually a thing now. Now there's the data gravity and all these other aspects of it.
Is it movement or is it just rebuilding it?
It's honestly, it's just the non-persistent stuff rebuilding.
Yeah.
I think that's super interesting. And I think that that's a really awesome use case. We'll actually see it come to fruition, you know, cause you and I both know, keynote demos tend to be a bit of hand waving and you should only believe, especially if it's not announced product yet, about half of what you see in a keynote demo.
having done some keynote demos, there's lots of magic you can enjoy.
Knowing how the sausage is made for both of us behind those, we're telling you don't believe it. But I think it will come to fruition, but it won't see widespread adoption.
Yeah.
because of the persistent versus non-persistent particularly. Yeah, everyone will break down the microservices and, you know, the services that aren't persistent that can be moved around and you know, killed and restarted other places quickly based off of load. It's absolutely going to happen. It's already happening. It has been happening, but it hasn't reached what I would call the, you know, mainstream,
right,
if you will, yet. You know, there's a handful of people doing it correctly and at scale in the world right now.
Well, and I think that the thing to always keep in mind, like, you know, the best thing to do is always, whenever you're not sure about something, follow the money, and you'll typically find out whether something's true, not true, biased, overly biased. In the case of all this, clouds, which clouds, multiple clouds, just follow the data. Data is super hard to move. Data is either going to start in one place and stay there, or it's going to start somewhere else and stay there. It rarely, rarely moves lots and lots of data. So follow the data as well as following the money, and you'll probably make sense of a lot of these things.
Yep, absolutely.
What's next on your list?
Actually, I was going to flip over to kind of a career one, because I always, like I said, I always try and do a handful of you know, industry stuff and a handful of just career prediction-y kind of stuff. And I'm going to kind of pull back slightly on my one from last year, which was a little bit of like, hey, operations, you need to go be developers. That was probably over rotating. Yeah. But I do believe, based off of this year, the ability for an operations person or a solutions person, the ability to do automation through APIs, which, you know, anybody who does, you know, development out there kind of goes, well, duh,
right.
But for operations, historically, we haven't done it.
Right.
And this ability to automate all the things, if you will. And I see that, you know, in the day job of, you know, operating the solutions group, it's something, it is now at the core of everything we do. Every reference architecture we do, yeah, sure, anybody can put all the pieces together and document that into, you know, a big reference architecture. But how are you automating everything to make it very quick and very seamless? And that it actually turns out to be the intellectual property behind the RA.
Yeah.
Is more the secret sauce of how you're automating things, more so than the actual building anymore.
Yeah. Well, and I think it wasn't done in the past. Everybody wants to call it like, oh, you're protecting your job. I think the reality of that was the technology you were using just didn't have an easy way to automate stuff. And an easy way to log in through a CLI or SSH and run a script. And,
yep.
And now there are actual, you know, programmable APIs and open APIs. And I think that's a big deal. Is it hard to do? It means you got to learn something new. Maybe you're going to learn Java or you're going to learn Python. Okay. If you've been in the technology industry, you've probably learned something new over the last 20 years. Add it to your list. And just the good news is there's a million ways to learn it. And there's a million free ways to learn it. Just hack away at it, you know,
yep.
Play with it. There are ways to figure things out. And the good news is, oh, by the way, there are so many referenceable examples out there that you don't have to learn from scratch. You can just steal. They're on GitHub. They're on people's blogs. You know, people like Josh Atwell do a really awesome job with it. There's a lot of people that are doing stuff in how to automate stuff. So, you know, go beg and borrow from those kind of things as well.
Yep.
I'm going to steal one of yours. I'm going to kind of tease one of what we'll make into a future show. And it's kind of less of a prediction and kind of a piece of advice, but kind of a prediction that, you know, if I'm buying into this idea that, you know, a lot of these big companies are probably going to maybe buy smaller companies. So maybe we'll see CoreOS get bought or HashiCorp get bought or any of these things kind of get bought. The big companies, so lots of small companies have evangelists and advocates and stuff. And my advice to these folks, and it's kind of a prediction, there's this distinct, we're not marketing, we are community, we're developers, we're whatever. At the end of the day, you're either in engineering or you're in sales or you're in marketing, right? They're very,
right.
Or maybe you're in HR or something, but
yeah.
All these sort of in-betweens, evangelist, advocates, even technical marketing, even other stuff, like be very careful that you don't be so anti-marketing, because at the end of the day, you're out there because your sales and marketing budget isn't huge and they can get away with using these types of people. If you get sucked up into big companies, you will become marketing or you will become sales.
And you have to fit in a box.
You have to fit in a box. And I'm not in any way saying it's a non-valuable function. It's the world is changing. People are learning more at meetups and all these sort of things. But just be very cautious that you don't make it out that, you know, the function that you eventually will be in, the box you will be in, is the thing that you hate most in life. You know, at the end of the day, you're there to build community and do all these wonderful sort of things, but somebody pays your salary and somebody pays for you. And if it's not sales, it's marketing, or you're going to be writing code. And kind of, you know where you fit in that ecosystem. We have a lot of friends. I know there's a lot of people that listen to the show that are kind of in that space. Just kind of be aware of the bigger picture of kind of what you're doing, and don't kind of get caught up in the dogma of, well, I don't do those things. Well, you might eventually, especially if, you know, we see industry consolidation in 2016.
Yeah, and along those same lines too. And this is one of those, it's pretty obvious, again, to the people already in community, but if you're interested in getting into community, the whole concept of how people get discovered, you know, right now is actually really fascinating to me, because again, coming up through the virtualization side, and actually, I mean, blogging was our main way, right? But as I stated earlier, I almost feel like blogging is a lost art at this point. And so there's, you know, people doing YouTube, there's people doing Twitter, there's people doing all of these other forms of social media. And the reason why, you know, I think blogging was as successful as it was a great way to share long form content, yep. But it was also just, it was a pretty good platform at the time. But now you have all these other platforms that are actual companies, right. and or have less friction. There's not, like, you don't have to be a WordPress admin and, you know, approve comments and worry about spam and upgrading your plugins and all this other crap. So the how people get discovered is actually super interesting, because of the, you know, how do I discover new people? It comes down to really YouTube, you know, people speaking at meetups and conferences and figuring out like hashtags to follow on Twitter and finding out who's active or who's the thought leaders in those areas of Twitter. Like, it really comes down to those two. Like, I don't necessarily use a lot of tools to find new folks anymore.
No, I the other one I'll throw out, I think there are some very good new podcasts that are coming out.
True. Yep.
You know, some of them are completely brand new. Some of them are people that have done I think the guys at the like Chris Wall and Ethan, who are doing a podcast called The Data Knots, is very good. It's a lot of the stuff that we've covered before, but they're kind of going back and doing it at a really basic level to get people up to speed. There's one called In the Hot Aisle, which is a couple of dudes that I think day job is at EMC, but, you know, are focused on these sort of new types of applications and automation. And so there's some new stuff there coming along as well. But you're right. The one piece of advice I'll give to people is, you know, cause I think a lot of these things happen because people don't live in Silicon Valley, but they're super passionate about the technology and they just want to talk about it. They want to learn from it. And if you're doing it because you just want to sort of educate people, like, that's awesome. If you're doing it because you want to get your name out there, the only advice I'll give to people, and this is a hard thing to do and it's hard to think about, but think about how you personally would scale if somebody came along and said, hey, that's awesome. I want you to help do that for me. Like, yep. I want you to, because, you know, somebody writing a blog once a day, doing a video once a day is cool. If you get sucked up into some organization, like, you can't be in 20 places at the same time. And so you've got to find a way to leverage those platforms, scale through them. And that's, it's a hard thing to do, but that's my one piece of advice, because the last thing you want to do is go, hey, I love, you know, being at home all the time. And the only way that you know, monetize or grow the thing you're doing is to be on the road 300 days a year. Like, that's a ridiculous shock to your system. And we see it. We see people do it all the time. They tend to burn out, unfortunately. So just kind of keep that in mind.
Yeah, agreed. Absolutely.
Well, listen, why don't we kind of wrap up on that? We'll wrap up on community, because, you know, we've always kind of been about the community.
This may be our longest show ever.
It might be our longest show ever. And it doesn't stop raining here in Raleigh. It might be our last show ever.
Oh my God. Yeah, no kidding.
6 inches in 2 days. You know what? It's the end of the year. We need to thank some people. Thank you to everybody who's been a guest on the show. Like we said, we did 60 some shows. Tons of good guests. Thank you for giving of your time and your knowledge. Thank you to the folks that have sponsored the show, folks like Intel, PagerDuty, Momentum SI, the other folks who have sponsored the show this year. Big thanks to people like O'Reilly, you know, Velocity Comp, OSComp, people, Cloud Foundry Foundation, Docker, who've had us as sponsor, you know, as media partners all year. It's been really fun. We've gotten to attend your events. And then finally, you know, thank you to everybody who listens. Thank you to everybody who, you know, gives us 45 minutes of their week. People who make a donation to the Krispy Kreme Fund, anybody who gives us a little bit of your time. You know, we can't thank you enough. Your time's valuable. You know, that you hang out with us a little bit, that you learn from us a little bit is really rewarding for us. And the people that give us feedback, we're incredibly appreciative. We're always trying to work that back in. So thank you to all those people in 2015, and looking forward to a really fun 2016.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.